This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. My colleague and host Michael Puente recently had on his off-mic program Andy Downs, the political analyst and the director of the Mike Downs Center on Indiana Politics at Purdue University Fort Wayne, to talk about the political futures of Vice President and former Indiana Governor Mike Pence and of former South Bend Mayor and ex-presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg. Andy talks first about Mike Pence.
We have to remember what it was that got him there to begin with, and that was very good relationships with social conservatives. I'm fairly certain those are still there, and even if they have softened a little bit, all he has to do is remind people there are three new members of the Supreme Court and that he was there helping to push all three of them, and that will probably put him probably back in pretty good stead with those same social conservatives. That does not mean he's a lock by any stretch of the imagination, but he does have a core that he gets to start with. The question is, of all the other people who may decide to run, and it's not a short list, is he able to put together a solid enough group that he can seem like a force early on and then simply continue to outpace other people or outlast other people? If he goes into the first couple of months of serious campaigning and is suddenly the, 10th, 11th favorite candidate, he probably can't come back from that the way somebody else could. But if he's in the top few, then I think he can be a legitimate candidate for president. The problem is he has to worry about, Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis and Tim Scott. And I mean, it's just a long list of individuals who will try to run, I think.
Do you think, you think there's any kind of desire or movement afoot to have Mike Pence run for president? Let's say Trump was successful for a second term. Do you think he would have automatically been the next logical choice to become president, or at least to run for president?
When you are the vice president, I think that people start with the assumption you are running. You'll have to remember that Dick Cheney pretty much said, I'm not going to be running for president. And that was part of what made him attractive as a vice presidential candidate and as vice president. However, Mike Pence has never said that. I can't imagine Mike Pence ever saying that. And so there's just this inevitability of vice presidents seeking the office. If Trump were to be president for four more years, I think that people would have to see Mike Pence as a viable option. But there's a dynamic here that we've not really had to experience before, and that is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has been unusual from the word go. He has been not following the normal playbook as president. And now, whether it's 4 years from now or not, who does he like as a presidential candidate? Because he could very easily shut off an awful lot of avenues, not only for Mike Pence, but for others. And more importantly, open up avenues for people he likes more than Mike Pence.
Including himself.
Exactly. That, people keep forgetting that, you are able to serve 8 years, doesn't have to be consecutive years. So he certainly could choose to run. Obviously, any of his children, he might point to them and say, this is the next person who needs to run. And that certainly is something the Republicans will have to contend with.
All right. But you certainly do not see Pence as being done, even if President Trump is not successful in his reelection bid.
I don't think that anybody should see Mike Pence as done in elected life at all. He has been the vice president for 4 years. He's been a governor. He's been a member of the United States House of Representatives and a rather high-ranking member within his party there. He has a solid base of support. Theoretically, he already has a 50-state network, and that's not something that everybody has. So there's a lot of reason to think that he is a legitimate and viable candidate. He has a couple of strikes against him, and some of them go back a ways. His legislative record was not particularly strong as a member of the U.S. House. He was, as Donald Trump liked to say, about to be embarrassed in a gubernatorial race in 2016 when President Trump rescued him. That might be a bit of an overstatement, but that's the narrative around that. And he's been the vice president for the last 4 years. As some people have said, it's hard to get the Trump stink off of you. That's not something that I've made up. That's what other people have said. So you're stuck with all the negatives. What makes him unique, though, is that he was not necessarily immersed in all of those things and certainly demonstrated some disagreement with the president from a moral standpoint in ways that, you know, might make it possible for him to spend more time with the wins than the losses of the Trump administration.
Well, let me ask you this. Now with Pete Buttigieg, you know, he certainly has been on a lot of the morning talk shows. He's very popular. He himself, of course, ran for president, former South Bend mayor. Where do you see his future at?
He's 38 years old, and I think he has a very bright future in front of him. Whether that includes further elected office or not remains to be seen. You know, when you talk about running for president, it's a fairly small number of people who've been successful at it, obviously. Even when you're talking about running for mayor of South Bend, it's not a long list of people who have been successful at that. With him, his age, of course, was one of the benefits. It was a fresh perspective. He still would have a fresh perspective, say, 4 years from now, if for some reason there is an open primary on the Democratic side. Even 8 years from now, he still would be a relatively young individual. So that's not written off by any stretch of the imagination. How does he position himself for that, I think, is the better question. And he, I don't think, has the resume and some would argue the gravitas to go after any of the top tier cabinet level positions, Secretary of State or Defense or anything like that. But I do think that it's possible to think of him as somebody in that next tier down, whether that would be something like HUD or Veterans Affairs, which, you know, don't get quite the press and attention that the top tier positions do. He may decide, though, instead of being the secretary of one of those lower tiered cabinet positions, it's better to be an undersecretary in one of the big ones, you know, undersecretary in Treasury or something like that. Those are all options for him. But he is part of a new generation, and maybe the podcast that he's starting to do now, maybe the books, plural, that he's written are the way for him to continue to have a presence on the national scale. If he's able to influence any of the elections in 2022, that could set him up for a run in 2024. So he is, of the people who are being talked about for future office, he is part of a generation, I think, who don't necessarily have to follow the path that had been the obvious path historically.
Let me ask you this, though. Have the Democrats in Indiana missed an opportunity to tap into his popularity and trying to help rebuild the party since, you know, the Democratic candidate for governor in Indiana just got slammed by Eric Holcomb in his reelection bid? And it just seems like Democrats in Indiana have been kind of left for dead.
That is certainly the way a lot of folks are describing the Democratic Party in Indiana right now. The chairman obviously announced he's not going to run for re-election, so there's an opening right there. What I think is somewhat interesting here is that Mayor Pete could theoretically run for governor, and that would not necessarily be viewed as a step down in many people's eyes. But if he were to want to, say, run for chair of the party, I think a lot of people would see that as a step down. You don't go from being sort of a finalist or quasi-finalist for chair of the DNC, somebody who did well in Iowa and in a couple of primaries, and then suddenly become chair of your state party. If he did that, there would be so much pressure on him to rack up wins and rack them up in a big, big hurry if he was hoping to use that as some sort of a stepping stone to the future. I don't know that he is the person who would have been able to or is able to revitalize the Indiana Democratic Party. The party itself clearly has to do some soul searching to figure out what it is that's attractive to people right now. When you look at the way, for example, Joe Donnelly lost, the way Evan Bay lost, that profile may not be the profile that works any longer. Christina Hale, a lot of people thought that she was going to be part of the new profile. She certainly did well, but obviously didn't win. And so people may say that's not the profile that's going to win. Maybe Pete Buttigieg is the profile that folks are looking for in the state. But, you know, there's a risk to running for governor in 4 years in Indiana, especially if he were to lose. And this would be a very, very difficult seat to pick up for him.
You know, I'm not really trying to disparage Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and he is, you know, it just seems like right now, though, he's just riding on that national wave of popularity before really having not done much. I mean, he's been the mayor of South Bend, and I mean, right now it just feels like a bunch of smoke and mirrors until he was to, you know, become a member of Congress or maybe run for Senate. So, you know, I certainly think if he ran for Congress, that wouldn't be considered a step down, or you think it would be?
No, I don't think it would be. And I think you're right. For a lot of people, they say, okay, great. He was mayor of South Bend, seemed to have done a pretty nice job there, had a job in the private sector for a little while. But really, when you look at his resume, pretty thin on the whole. And then he shows up and talks to people, and you suddenly realize, wow, that's a thoughtful, talented individual. Maybe the thin resume is made up, or he makes up for the thin resume by just a native intelligence and inquisitiveness that not everybody has. And let's face it, when you're running for elected office, sometimes it's the personality that people are getting behind. It's not necessarily the resume that people are getting behind. You could make an argument in some respects, Bill Clinton maybe shouldn't have been a good presidential candidate, having been the governor of Arkansas, not exactly, you know, one of the people would say premier states for developing a reputation for knowing international affairs and great economic development, educational systems, those sorts of things. No, not disparaging Arkansas in any way, shape or form. It was his personality that did it. People would say the same thing about Barack Obama. They could say to a lesser degree the same thing about Ronald Reagan. He at least was able to say, I was governor of California, which is a, you know, really, really large state. There is, though, you could think of the window of opportunity that exists. And you might say that the mayor's window might be closing, because in another 4 years, he will, heavens, be in his 40s. And what will he have done for the last 4 years to continue to expand that reputation and that resume of success? If he's not able to point to a bunch of things, then yeah, he's the guy who didn't quite make it 4 years ago or 8 years ago or whenever that happens to be.
So just in your if you have to prognosticate, where do you think he ends up? Cabinet level position with President-elect Joe Biden, or something like you just said, maybe something just below that?
I think that it's pretty reasonable to think that he might have a second tier cabinet opportunity, an undersecretary position in one of the upper tiers. But I also think that there's the possibility for him to be some sort of a special advisor, in other words, a non-confirmed position, something that allows him to continue to be out and about and communicating with people, developing a base of support not only for him but for the initiatives of the administration. I think any one of those would be a possibility.
That's Andy Downs with the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics in Fort Wayne on a recent off-mic program looking beyond the 2020 elections and into the political future for Pete Buttigieg and Mike Pence. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. In partnership with the Legacy Foundation, Neighborhood Voice brings you conversations from the minority-owned business community. Here's Erica Pfizer.
Lake County is home to many minority entrepreneurs who strengthen the local small business community. Each week, we bring you one of their stories. Welcome to Neighborhood Voice. I'm your host, Erica Pfizer. And this week, we're hearing from Michelle Wainwright, founder and CEO of Cute as a Cupcake, located in Maryville on Route 30. Thank you for joining me, Michelle.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, a lot of our communities do have strong kind of market events, mm-hmm. and especially during the summers. Mm-hmm. And I know that was taken away, I think, mm-hmm. a lot for a lot of small businesses who rely on those markets mm-hmm. This summer. So what have you been hearing from your maybe fellow creators, mm-hmm. makers, yeah. about how they've been affected, and how have you been affected this year?
You know, it's been challenging, right? If I said that it wasn't, I'd be sitting here lying to you. You know, COVID really has had its challenges. And I think for me personally, it was just really trying to pivot and rethink the ways that I could still provide access to the customers for the cupcakes, because I was heavily reliant upon foot traffic, right? And all that came to a halt. But to the farmer's market, when I first got started, I did the cutie cupcakes in a jar. And that was the cupcake in the mason jar ready to eat. And I remember specifically doing those at the market because it's easy to put in your purse or your bag and not have to worry about it getting messed up. But when we started focusing on the kiosk in the store, the attention went to the actual cupcake, you know. But with COVID, I had to go back to the jar because I was able to ship them nationwide. And I can't really ship a cupcake because it's not going to arrive cute. But again, in the jar, it will arrive just fine. The way you put it in there is the way it's going to arrive. And that's what I had to focus my efforts on. And in doing that, it has really saved us. It really has. And I didn't anticipate the response that I've received from it. It's also a combination of doing ads on your Facebook and your Instagram and making people aware. I had to revitalize the website, you know, because right now it's all about e-commerce. That's the way people are shopping right now, because you really can't be out or be in contact with people. So having what brought me to the dance is what I'm now back dancing with. So it really has been a blessing for me to be able to have that. But as far as other people, you know, everyone is just trying to navigate the new normal, figure out how to do different things so we can continue to survive, you know. But I tell you, the cutie cupcake in a jar is really what's been just phenomenal, and it's caught attention. We just completed a national campaign with Country Crock.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. So it's just the challenges of 2020 definitely are there, but there has been some silver linings through this too, you know, and I'm careful because not everything in 2020 has been positive for everybody, you know, but I'm appreciative of the little bitty things that have come out that still allow us to have the doors open, you know.
Yeah, and for you going back to your basics, mm-hmm. that product that got you started and really is what is helping you grow.
Absolutely.
As well. And I know you are in some local retailers now, or expanded your retail partners. Tell me about who's involved in that.
Absolutely. And that's another thing, again, with the jars. You know, it's the jars. And I've just kept them on the back burner for so long. It's like, okay, I don't need you anymore, you know. But locally, Welch's in St. John, they carry the jars. We also have a retail partnership with the Maryville Florist and Tea Room. And Consider the Lilies in Munster. So small retailers, but it's great because we're small businesses and we're all trying to support one another and help each other. So I'm able to partner with them to where more places in Northwest Indiana can have access to the jars. So it's been incredible because that Welch's we were able to connect with in 2019, but the Maryville Tea, Florist and Tea, and Consider Lilies just happened this summer. You know, so Consider the Lilies happened because Pam with the Fetching Market, she was able to host a market. Everybody was socially distanced and so forth. She hosted a market in Griffith, and the owner of the shop was there, and we had the jars there. And she was so interested in them, and that's how that connection came.
And I think that speaks to how important relationships are. Mm-hmm. And and so what would you say to an entrepreneur starting out about how they can build relationships mm-hmm. in the community?
You know, right now, obviously, it's a little challenging. You have to think outside the box. But I'm finding, like, the organizations that really helped me, like the Indiana Small Business Development Center, they're doing a lot of things virtually. And doing that continues to help, you know, to partner that way, because the relationships are important. They really are. And you have to continue to foster them. You can reach out to the different towns. You know, each town has their person, their director of activities or whatever it might be that you can connect with as well. And then getting to know that person when we get back to quote unquote normal, you know, as things mm-hmm. continue to progress, they can contact you, you know. But really, I would encourage those that are really trying not to give up, not to be discouraged, but think creatively. You know, there's some businesses that were launched this year, you know, and people have been able to be successful in their own way. But really the network has been tremendous in being able to connect, just connecting. I mean, all these different teleconferences, and that might not be the right name for them, Zoom calls or whatever it is. It's like a lot of companies are doing things for free for you to get on these calls, you know, and they're giving you their contact information. And I don't know, that's so new now, you know, where they're just giving you their direct information. You know, usually you got to go through this hoop to get to that person. Mm-hmm. And they're just giving you their information, you know. So everyone is in a situation where they're trying to navigate, but everyone wants to kind of create that environment to where they want to help. They want to see you be successful, especially the small businesses. You know, it seems like there's a strong rally behind the small businesses. So I would say just continue to make the contacts. A virtual contact is fine. LinkedIn is fine. Instagram, I mean, all that is important and fine. And I would encourage everyone to definitely do that. It makes a big difference.
And thanks for joining us this week on Neighborhood Voice. You can find resources to build a better business at nwibizhub.com. This show is made possible by Legacy Foundation, the Community Foundation for Lake County, Indiana.
Erica Pfizer with the Legacy Foundation on one of her Neighborhood Voice conversations. And tune in for part three of this conversation this afternoon on All Things Considered here on Lakeshore Public Radio. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversations to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
My mom was born in 1946. She was actually born in St. Louis, and shortly thereafter, her mother moved back to Chicago. In 1956, they arrived in Gary and were some of the first residents on what's now known as Martin Luther King Drive. It was originally Indiana Street. And at that time, there were probably 10 houses on the street, and there were a family of, I think, there were 11 of her siblings were born at that point. The last one, number 12, was born about 10 months before me in 1963. To take it a step further back, it was my great-grandmother who first decided to move to Gary, largely because of the economic opportunities that existed, but they also wanted to provide a more rural atmosphere, if you will, for those 12 children. And so my great-grandmother, being slightly industrious, came to Gary and found a location on Indiana Street. And my grandmother had recently remarried. And as the story goes, my great-grandmother purchased the home, and she shortly thereafter transferred it into my grandparents' name. And so if you can imagine 11 children, a great-grandmother, a mother, and a father all living in a one-story flat that only had three bedrooms, probably a little bit more than 700 square feet, but they managed to make it and raise all of the children right there in that home. My biological father's name was Lloyd Williams, and as the story goes, my mother met him on a trip to visit her grandmother, the same great-grandmother who came over to buy the house in Indiana. Once she purchased the home and turned it over to my grandparents, she migrated back to Chicago, and my mother would visit her on the weekends, and that's where she met my biological dad. She was a young girl going back to visit her grandmother, and my biological father worked somewhere off of Roosevelt Street, and the two met, and shortly thereafter established a relationship, and I was born out of wedlock. I was born in the original portion of Methodist Hospital, and my mother was a teenage mom. She was 18, and at that point, she brought me home, and if her stories are accurate, she actually made a bassinet of type out of a drawer for me, and so, yeah. 1969, my mother married my father, whose last name was Prince. And for all practical purposes, I considered him to be my dad. He was the only dad that I really knew and had an interaction with. He enlisted in the Marine Corps and went off to Vietnam. And it was shortly thereafter, after he returned, that the two reunited, and they were married very shortly thereafter. And that's when my name was officially changed. And so back to the name Jerome Abner Prince. The Abner is a significant portion because that was my great-grandfather's name, and I also had an uncle named, on my mother's side, that is, had an uncle named Abner. I never liked the name, right? And so if you can imagine 1969, there's the remnants of Little Abner, if you will. And I don't know if you know a bunch about that, but Little Abner was a cartoon character, a comic strip character. In addition to that, there was the only other Abner I knew, which was the Abner from the television show Bewitched. And I was teased about the name. It just, I mean, they called me everything but Abner. And I very specifically remember to ask my mother to change my name before I enrolled in school. And so she acquiesced and she basically inverted my name. I was born Abner Jerome Marshall, which was my mother's maiden name. Shortly thereafter, she inverted the first and the middle name, so I became Jerome Abner Prince, and that's who I am today.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for joining us, and we hope you'll be with us tomorrow.